It's time now for Alaska Tracks, an oral history of Alaska people and their way of life, celebrating the rich heritage, wild landscapes, and deeply rooted stories of Alaska past. Alaska Tracks, brought to you by Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware, Ginger Oram with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding Extreme North Trailers, and Mont Saw Shop. And now your host, respected wildlife biologist and outdoorsman, Randy Zarnke.
Good afternoon, Interior Alaska. Welcome to the program we call Alaska Tracks, where we listen to excerpts from interviews I recorded with outdoorsmen and women from throughout the state. My name is Randy Zarnke, and I'll be your host. I've been recording these interviews for nearly 30 years and now have over 200 interviews in the collection. Today's featured guest is Duke Short from the community of Cake on Kuprianoff Island in southeast Alaska. Duke moved to the area shortly after World War II when he was a boy. He grew up hunting, fishing, and trapping. He lived a life that many of us envy. We started Duke's interview last time. Let's continue with a few stories of Duke's jobs as a boat captain and a couple of bear tales that could have been bad, but turned out okay. Now, when you say you were a young kid, how old were you?
I started working at the Tyee Cannery when I was not quite 17. They weren't so strict in those days. I lied about my age, and I thought I got by with it. But I found out I didn't get by with it because they had two traps at Windham Bay. And every trap had to have a shore camp, and that was the law. And at Windham Bay, there was no place where these traps was to put a shore camp. So they had a boat that stood by up there. The one they had was called a kayak. It was about 32 foot. If it started to get rough, he was supposed to go out and pick those trap watchmen off. And the superintendent and the outside foreman was outside the carpenter shop talking. And they needed somebody to run that boat. Superintendent said, let's send Duke up there. The outside foreman said, oh, we can't do that. He ain't 17 yet.
So thought you'd snuck in?
Yeah, I didn't. But it didn't seem like it bothered too much in those days. Nobody come out and jumped onto him or said anything to me about it. Then I went on from there to running cannery tenders. And I run tenders for Excursion Inlet for years and years and years. I can't really remember how many different boats I was on, but I suppose over the length of time, I probably run 12, 15 different. That all got a little boring after a while.
Do you remember your favorite one? Was there one of those boats that stuck out that you really liked?
Yeah. When I was a kid and came to Tyee, they had a power scow. It was built in 1944, I think. Sebastian Stewart owned Tyee then, and you couldn't build a new boat unless you got permission from the government. Well, they'd give Sebastian permission to build a new boat, and then soon it got built, they'd take it away from him for government use. Well, they had this one, the Robert S., and he finally got that one. That was named after his son, Robert Sebastian. And it was, I think, 105 foot long. They used those power scows primarily for braylon traps. You didn't have to tow a scow with you. I thought that was a pretty big boat when I got up here. And then pretty soon I got to running it in a few years, and I think that was probably my favorite. I had it up in the Gulf for a few years. I was buying fish for Bellingham Canning Company, and that was the Welch's. I would go into the Dry Bay, the Alsac River. We had a brine scow in there. And then in the fall, I went into the Kaliet River. That's up this side of Kayak Island, just a few miles above Cape Yakutaga Airport. They were pretty tough bars to go across and rivers to get into. If you didn't get into the river, you had to lay out there and jog, and that was pretty miserable, so I always went in or tried to go in. I'd had about a half a mile of inch and a quarter tow wire, and I'd string that out, and I would drag that. That would slow me down some. And we had to control one engine on one side and one on the other. If it was real rough on the bar, I'd be at the wheel, and the mate would stand on the other side. And a lot of times we had full astern and juggling the throttles to take the speed off the boat, because you was just like a surfboard riding in there. I couldn't do it now. I'm too old, but I did it then because it was crazy, I think.
How about other jobs you had along the way?
At one time, I did some pile driving in Tyee. I was just getting the job started. I had to go buy them fish, and they wanted me to just get it started until they get a crew up here. I can't remember what year it was, that big earthquake. Yeah, I drove quite a few pile. I liked that, too. And, of course, I run that crab camera. I didn't like that as well as being outside. That being inside wasn't quite what I thought it should be. When we first come up here, every kid wants to kill a brown bear, and we killed a couple of them, and we didn't think much about them. We killed some that had to be killed. We didn't actually hunt bear anymore. But we had some jump us a few times, and we had to lay them down.
Do you remember one particular incident like that that sticks in your mind?
Well, yeah. Me and my brother went on Point Bartlett, and we had a spot there where deer would run off. My brother went in, they'd just take the dog in on the other end, and I'd wait there, and the dog would bark a couple of times, deer run off. Well, there was a spot up there you could see when they come by, and I waited there, and nothing ever come off. So we all hand-loaded. I just neck-sized, and when you do that, the shells begin to stick after a while, and you have to full-length resize them. I had some of this kind of sticky, and I thought, well, I'll just shoot them up at some ducks out there. And the tide was in. This was an island at high tide, a peninsula at low tide. It would get it was probably 2 foot of water over there. I had a 257 Roberts with a 10-power scope on it. I was going to shoot at some ducks out there and just shoot these shells up, and I thought I heard something. It wasn't rough or anything, but you know, the water always makes a little noise. Looked up, and here come a brown bear through that water, just coming right for me. And I would have let him go, but he was coming right for me. And I had a German Shepherd dog with me, Brownie, and I pulled up, and with that 10-power scope, I could see his head. And I shot. The first shot went into his chest cavity. The next shot, I hit him the same spot on the other side, went into his chest cavity. And the dog attacked him, and they run by me, I suppose, maybe 7-8 feet. And when he went by, I shot him through the ribs. There had been a big trap log that had floated in there, and that's where we set to hunt these deer. In fact, they're still open there. I don't remember how I got to the other end of that log. But the dog had went to the bear, and then the dog run to me. I really think that's the first time the bear saw me. Well, he come down that damn log, and I was at the end of it, and I jammed the gun right against his chest as he jumped off on me, and I pulled the trigger. Well, the tide was in, and I just kept backing up. So I hauled that gun and hit him in the head with it. You know, I was pretty strong in those days, you know, young fella. And the only thing it did was knock me down. And I was down in the water. I had that gun, what was left of it, in my hand, and my ear was in the water. I'd forgot about my brother. And pretty soon, whoom, bunch of blood and water hit me in the face. And I didn't move. I just sat there. And then boom again. And every time he had hit him, it'd knock him a little bit. And finally, he got out of the water. Well, you know, I'd shot him 4 times. That little 87 grain bullet didn't do much, but Wayne had 30-06. And so anyway, I'd got my cigarettes wet, and my gun was all broke to pieces. My brother was taking care of the cannery at Tyee then, and so we decided to go back there and get me another gun and get me some cigarettes, which I really needed. And my nephew, Mark Short, he was about 6, and he come back with us. And we decided to have a pretty good hide on this bear and skin him. Well, when we got back there, well, I had had a few dozen cigarettes in between time to calm me down. And we got there and we pushed, and he'd started to stiffen up a little bit, and propped him up and had Mark get us some poles and stuff. And we kind of got him sitting on his butt and propped up there. And Wayne had one of those first Polaroid cameras. And he's going to take some pictures. And there was a bunch of big boulders there. And that bear's tongue was hanging out of the side of his mouth. Marky, he said, Dookie, why does their tongue hang out of the side of their mouth? I said, I don't know, Mark. And we popped him up alongside one of these pretty good-sized boulders. And I told Mark, I said, you grab hold of that stinker's tongue. Dad's going to take a picture of you and send it to your grandpa in Minnesota, and you tell him that you choked that bear to death. Oh, I don't want to. It's bloody and it's slimy. I said, grab a hold of that bear's tongue. So he got a hold of that bear's tongue and was standing there, and Wayne said, lift that front leg up a little bit. What he wanted to do was show the claws a little more. Well, when I went to raise that front leg, where Wayne shot him a big hole in his side there, it kind of acted like a bellows. When I picked that leg, it went like that. Me and Mark took off down that beach. Mark was jumping those boulders, and he was only about 7 years old. Wayne was laughing at us, of course, but I tell you, we thought we'd have it. About 47, we was walking across that trail, and I was ahead, and Mom was behind me, and Dad, my brother, was behind us, and bear just started to come in force. I just see it come out of its bed, and I shot. I couldn't see any effect, and I shot again, and I thought I was missing. I noticed it was pretty low to the ground, so I shot it in the head right at my feet. We were pretty excited, and I turned to my mom and I said, that damn thing charged us. And she said, no, he didn't charge. He wasn't on his hind feet. I don't know where she got that in her head. It had to be on the hind feet to charge, but we was all pretty white. And that was the stinkingest bear I ever smelt in my life. We went back the next day to skin it. It had a pretty good hide on it. And Jerry Strong and a woman there, she wanted to come with us, and she had to pull her false teeth out and throw up. It stunk so bad. I'll tell you. She'd go over and gag, and I don't know what was wrong with it. But boy, I'll tell you where those bullets had hit. You can see its heart and its organ. It just really stunk. It just had to come out of hibernation.
From when he was a boy, and now that he is hunting with his grandchildren.
In the same country with him, I guess.
Great stories from a man who experienced everything.
We didn't have any trouble getting deer. We would go early up above timberline at Heron Bay. That was a hell of a climb up there, but in those days we didn't mind it too much. And we'd go up there early, and there were herds of deer up there. You could look out and see 20 or 30 deer in an area. There'd be still some snow up there, and you'd see a lot of deer laying in the snow because there was no bugs there. It'd be a really thick bugs, but that was too cold for them on that snow. And we could shoot as many as we wanted up there, but of course, one was hard enough to get out, let alone shooting a whole bunch. But our family, my mom and dad and my brothers were around, we ate about 30 deer a year. We never did have any trouble getting them. Tyee was a wonderful deer country. I deckhand on the mail boat Jacoby in the wintertime. Then I run it for Walter Spurl, but he didn't have much chance to hunt, so I'd shoot deer every once in a while and give them to him. And then old Norwegians on trolling boats would come in. They couldn't get out. And so me and my brother would shoot deer for them. And they canned it up and spent a couple of days canning up a deer. And we were glad to get out and do something.
You did it for them just as a favor?
Yeah.
They didn't pay you?
Oh, no. They didn't have any money anyway. They were just old trollers. In those days, they didn't make a lot of money. They would go out and fish when the weather was good and when they wanted to. Then they'd come in and had a good time, and they'd get together and play cribbage, and we'd bring them in a deer, and they'd all get together and can deer meat. About the only thing they worried about was having enough to eat. They didn't worry about having a lot of money. On the mail boat, hunting was a big deal. We'd take parties out and drop them off and pick them up. I got picked. The whole back of that Jacoby is plumb full of deer and geese.
So that was just part of the service?
Yeah, haul mail in past years. I don't really know what Walt charged to take them in. I don't think he charged them anything extra to take them in and drop them off, and then he'd stop in and pick them up and take them back to Juneau.
One thing you haven't addressed is shrimp, crab. I imagine that worked into the diet somewhere.
When we first come up here, you know, we weren't used to seafood. We come from Oregon, originally from Arizona, and it took us, I'm sure, a good 10 years before we really got into enjoying seafood and stuff. But yeah, we ate halibut and salmon and crab. About the only thing we bought was flour and sugar and coffee and some bacon and ham. And we bought a chicken occasionally, and of course, some canned goods. Most all of our meat, whatever you caught and killed. 35 years ago, I owned the crab cannery here in Cape. Our crabs are all sold to S&W. At the time we went out of business, the crab went down and everybody was freezing. Nobody was vacuum packing crab. And we didn't want to put in freezers, and the crab had slacked off so much. Now the crab is back up again. It seems to go up and down in cycles.
Before we got started with the recorder on, you mentioned a particular trapping cabin with a colorful history.
Well, this cabin we trapped in over there, there was a couple of whores. They had a little scow. It was mostly house. And they had some troller they'd chartered to take them to Warm Springs. That was kind of a bootlegging, home brewing place. It was smooth weather, and they had them alongside there at Point Gardner. And I guess they got drunk and got into an argument, and he just cut them loose. And there was a troller named Ed Wellesley. He had a boat named the Pauline. He came by, and here they were floating out there, and he towed them into Tyee. Well, they had a jukebox on there that run off of a 12-volt battery. And the superintendent at Tyee was named Stephenson. After supper at the cookhouse, Mrs. Steph would get a hold of Steph's arm, and they'd walk to the steamer dock. Well, here Ed Wellesley come towing in this little floating whorehouse, and them old gals was drunk and had that jukebox going, and they didn't have many clothes on and doing the dance out on the deck. And they said Mrs. Steph almost had a heart attack. I really didn't see many airplanes around in those days, but there was one in the next day. And anyway, we pulled it up on the beach with the donkey, and it was there for years. And so after we'd went to Warm Springs, we got to think about building a trapping shack over in Surprise Harbor. I just started that donkey up in the wintertime and pulled it back in the water. Of course, it was all dried out. It sunk right down to the deck. We towed it over there on a little over a 20-foot tide, and then we had a BB hoist, and we got a hold of each end with a BB hoist and kind of wrestled her up a little bit. And we put a stove in it, and bunks and everything. It was just, well, it was a comfortable place. Really nice. We trapped in it for years over there. it was pretty handy to have.
And then you told us that you went back later and...
Oh, yeah. See, we had a house in there at one time. And I was showing Joe and Paul where things was over there, and I couldn't find this. And I was looking to the edge of the water. And Joe, hey, there's something here, and went back there and saw the house and stuff and collapsed. But that beach had built out 50 feet from the time we were there.
And how many years had that been?
40. Hmm. No, more than 40. I hunted seal and eagle for bounty. Now, if you tell people that, they think you're really a bad one. But in 1949, I come back from Seward, and I started hunting eagle. We got $2 apiece. You had to save their feet. When you cut their feet off, a little bit of feathers there at the ankle, and God, I'd get to itching. And they had all kind of mite on them. They didn't stick with you. They'd get off of you. The biggest day I had that was on Yasha Island. There was herring in, and they was eating herring. And I killed 33 eagle. The only reason I didn't get more, I had run out of bullets. Later on, they had taken the bounty off of eagle. There was an old guy in Taku named Tiger Olson. He was pretty famous around southeastern Alaska. He was always writing letters to the governor and the president. And I went into Juneau on the mail boat with Walter Spurl, just as a passenger. I wasn't working on there. And I had my suitcase in the galley. And Tiger come down. He had a big, loud voice. He wanted to know where I was going. And Walter said, he's got that full of eagle feet, and he's going to go try to get paid for it. Well, Tiger, he went into eagles about how much salmon they ate. He said that you could get all the humans to agree not to eat a salmon, and all the brown bear and all the seal, and there still wouldn't be enough left for those damned eagles. And he wrote a letter to the governor and to the president, and he wrote them right there in the galley, and we were supposed to mail them. And he begged that they please pay me for these eagle feet. Tiger and Father Hubbard, the glacier priest, he would go out there and stay with Tiger, and they would get into arguments about religion. Tiger came up from Montana, I think. He was always living in the spirit world. He told me that when he came up from sheep herding, he had bought a gans of about 7 sheep up, and he sewed them together, and He said the way he got wolves was him and Doc Fouché would go out on the beach and get under these sheepskins and go, bah! And when the wolves come, they'd send them to the spirit land.
How about any of the agency personnel, whether it would have been Forest Service or Department of Fish and Game, maybe a game warden or a fish cop? Was there people that you really respected, or maybe the other way?
We never did really have any trouble with any fish and game or the law of any kind. There was a guy out of Petersburg, Hosey Sarber, which we thought was fair and did a good job. You know, if you brag on a protection officer or a Forest Service guy, you really don't want to do that because then they think that he's doing you a favor. We just never did have any trouble. We killed deer out of season. Every year we had deer hanging. Nobody seemed to care in those days. And I'm sure that they knew it. They just didn't investigate. There was plenty of deer and people that lived out. I can't remember of anybody ever getting in trouble. Of course, if this is brought to their attention, they have to do something. But I think there has to be rules, but there are a lot of rules that are not really too good. What people have to realize that rules are only guidelines, and you have to use common sense in there. Now there's so many restrictions on what you can't do. And those days you wanted to build a cabin on the beach, you built one, Forest Service didn't know it or didn't say anything. You had a float house you wanted to put up, well, nobody said anything, but now it's getting so you can't do stuff like that anymore. You find you're in trouble. It used to be that you wanted a home site, well, you'd go out, and I forget what it was, $5 or $10, you'd get a home site. I understand now that's more difficult. The Forest Service that makes it more difficult for you to get this. Well, I know people in Petersburg had cabins many years ago out there that they had to have a certain color on the roof, a green. And I know a guy, he run the cold storage there, a friend of mine, Tommy Thompson, he didn't have his the right shade of green. They got on to him for that. I think that's getting silly. I think that's harassment. I won't mention any names, but there was a fish and wildlife guy that I've known ever since he was about 6 years old. When we was selling a load of halibut in Juneau, he asked me for a picture identification. Now, I think that's harassment, too. You do that when you don't know who a person is.
Well, you told us a bunch about Tyee, community itself, and you now live here and assume you have for many years.
Yeah.
Anything you want to tell us about the community of Cake? Any colorful events or characters?
Well, that would take too long. That just about everything in Cake is colorful. And a lot of things that happen in Cake you wouldn't...
You don't want to take.
Yeah, that's it right there. In fact, most of them... Yeah, the only thing I say has been awful interesting.
Now, you talked about your family back when you were a kid and all of the hunting, fishing, trapping experiences there. How about passing it on to the next generation?
Well, yeah, my grandkids, one granddaughter has already killed a moose, and Joe's kids, I can't tell you how many deer they've killed, but it's been quite a few. They get right in there and Joe gets about a tender on this boat with him. They're his crew. Tender for 3 months and with him in here. They run the winches and run the boat. Of course, if they get in any heavy traffic at night, you know, they get him up, but they run the boat and handle everything.
And how old are they?
I think Kaylee's 17 and Matthew's 14 or 15.
Do you remember some of the first hunting trips that you took with your boys?
When Joe was, 8 or 9 years old, we took him over at Tyee, and I don't know how many deer he killed over there, 5 or 6. There was plenty of deer. Where I told you before, that bear run off on me there. He sat behind that same log and killed 4 or 5 deer when they run off. Well, he's hunted deer all of his life. Probably killed more deer than I have now. And, of course, that's all we wanted to do was hunt. When you get older, you think about the good old days, but that's what I think about. I kind of wish it was, well, I wish I was younger.
That's the end of the Duke Short interview. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Tune in again next week when we'll have another great interview on Alaska Tracks.
You have been listening to Alaska Tracks, a blend of interviews, storytelling, and firsthand accounts from Alaskans who know the land and carry forward the traditions of this remarkable state. Alaska Tracks has been brought to you by Ginger Oram with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding and Extreme North Trailers, Rod Saw Shop, and Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware. Join us next Saturday for another episode of Alaska Tracks, about Alaskans, for Alaskans, by Alaskans.